So there is a theme for this camp. If you look at the front of your booklet, you'll notice it says examples of obedience. Well, that's the shirt. So the shirt are the three lessons that we're doing. This first lesson, can anyone read me the title? What is it?
The Faithful Wife.
It's The Faithful Wife. That's right. So that's what the shirt is. The shirt are the three lessons that we're learning, but the camp is examples of obedience. And during our Sunday meetings and also during our Wednesday night meetings, one of the things that we've been seeing is that you keep looking at people in the Bible and they're not faithful. Even Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they had some serious problems. You got Abraham lying about his wife. You've got Jacob and his sons being absolute wrecks of human beings, being dishonest, and even Joseph's brothers selling him into slavery. Like, there are serious problems for a lot of our, quote, Bible heroes, right? And as you read the Bible more, you see that there's more and more people that aren't faithful. And sometimes you can get the impression that it's not possible. A lot of times it's discouraging. You look around at people around you and they're not faithful. Why should I be? Or you look at your own life and you're not faithful. You're struggling with sin. You have all of these different problems and you feel trapped. And you're like, okay, is it actually possible to be faithful? Is it actually possible to live the life that you're supposed to live and be the person that you're supposed to be? And the point of this camp is I want to show you guys that it is possible. I went and I intentionally picked three people in the hardest possible situations, situations where being faithful is almost impossible, but they did it. And I want to show you guys that there are people that are faithful. There are people in your lives that are faithful. There are people in the Bible that are genuinely faithful, and you can be faithful. You guys have the opportunity to actually be faithful Christians and to live life well and to do that from start to finish. There are people who have done it. And so I want to encourage you, and I'm hoping that this is encouraging. Like, this is a message that I'm personally very excited to teach you guys because it's a message that I need. And I'm going to stop front-loading it, but we're going to dive in. We're going to look at a gal named Abigail. And Abigail is a woman in the Old Testament who lives during the time that David is living, and she has a wife named Nabal. And Nabal lives... She has a husband named Nabal. There's probably going to be a few of those, but... So she has a husband named Nabal, and Nabal is a fool. Nabal is arrogant, Nabal is unkind, and Nabal is oppressive, and yet he's also Abigail's husband. And one of the worst and most difficult circumstances that you might ever end up with in your entire life is married to a lousy husband or wife. It's hard and it's common. And I want to share this with you because I could tell you the story of Joseph, who was a faithful guy, but you guys probably aren't going to get sold into slavery by your siblings, serve in prison for a time, and then be the leader of a country. But you very well might be married. In fact, statistically speaking, most of you will be married. So I'm intentionally going to give you guys a story about someone who handled it well. So starting our story, we're going to start by looking at Nabal as a character. We're actually going to meet Nabal before we meet Abigail. We're going to figure out the kind of guy that she's living with before we know anything about her. So if we start in verse 1, it says, "Then David rose and went down to the wilderness of Paran." And I'm going to stop there because you need context. So, David, who knows who David is? Adelaide. Who's David?
King David.
King David. What's a notable thing that King David has done? It involves killing a home slice whose name starts with G.
Oh, he killed Goliath.
He killed Goliath, yeah. David wrote a ton of the Psalms in the Old Testament. I forget exactly how many, but I think it's at least 75. David was someone who was extremely faithful in the Old Testament. 1 and 2 Samuel are written about King David's life. And King David is in the stage of his life where he's already killed Goliath, but he's not king yet. He's on the run from Saul because Saul, the current king, is trying to kill him. Everyone knows about David, knows who he is. He was a general, and David's on the run. So in the wilderness of Paran, in verse 2, there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the wife of this man was Abigail. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. He was a Calebite. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep. So David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel and go to Nabal and speak in my name, and thus you shall say to him, 'Peace be to you, and peace be to your house, and peace be to all that you have. I hear that you have shearers. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm. They missed nothing all the time we were there in Carmel.'" Before I continue, basically, David and his entire army, they're on the run. David is in a situation where he's running for his life, and even as they're traveling around, they're taking care of people. Nabal was a man who owned a business. He owned sheep, he owned goats, and that was how he made his living. And it was very easy to just rob people. You had to send your sheep out to be taken care of. They were out in the wilderness, you know, grazing. And Nabal's not personally there. It's easy for bandits to just come along and take sheep. It's easy for bandits to come along and kill the servants. And so Nabal can lose a significant amount of money and servants just to people killing them or stealing them. So David, who is, again, running for his life, is taking time with his army to guard the sheep of Nabal. Right? Is that a nice thing to do? Like, he's taking care of the guy's livelihood. So then, when David is sending his servants to go to Nabal and be like, "Hey, Nabal, can we have some food? We're out in the wilderness. We need some stuff. You're shearing your sheep. You're about to make all of your profit from taking care of these sheep that we've been protecting. You're about to have a feast. Do you have anything for us?" What would you expect Nabal's response to be?
To help?
No. So he says to help. That's a reasonable response. What else should Nabal do?
He should say yes, but he's
going to
say no.
He should say yes.
He's going to say no.
You're guessing he's going to say no. But yeah, he should say yes. Yes?
He should say yes and help them, but he's going to say no, I'm guessing.
Correct. So Nabal is obviously a rich guy. He's got a bunch of stuff to spare. Again, David's been helping him, so there is a sense in which Nabal owes him. But let's see what he does. In verse 9, it says, When David's young men came, he said this to Nabal, "In the name of David..." And they waited. And Nabal answered David's servant, "Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse?" By the way, he knows exactly who David is. At this point in David's life, he's a famous general. He's already killed Goliath. Everyone knows that he's been anointed king, and he's been serving Saul for years. So this guy knows exactly who David is. He's just saying that he doesn't care. Continuing, he says, "There are many servants these days who are breaking from their master." Which, that's a bit oddly worded, but what he basically just said is, David, you're just a deserter. All you did was leave Saul. You're not even that great of a guy. Why should I care about you? Not only do you not matter, but you're a person of worthless character. So Nabal responds not only by saying no, but by insulting David. Quick reminder, what does David do for a living? David kills people. How good is David at killing people?
Excellent.
He is excellent at killing people. Even if it weren't for the fact that David is who he is, even if he weren't anointed, even if he weren't a righteous man, do you think it's a good idea to send that kind of response to that guy? No. In fact, it was a really bad idea. And the thing that you should think about is, that's Abigail's wife. This is the kind of guy, that's Abigail's husband. Like, think about the fact that this is how Nabal is treating a stranger who is renowned, dangerous, and has treated him kindly. Imagine what he does with the person he lives with. Nabal is arrogant. Nabal is unkind. Nabal is foolish. And that's going to pour directly into his interaction with Abigail. This is a horrible guy to live with. This is in no way the kind of person that you want to be leading you in your life. This is in no way the kind of person that you want to be submitting to. And yet this is who Abigail is stuck with. In fact, just to see how bad it is, shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men who came from I do not know where? Again, an insult. So David's young men turned away and came back and told him all this. And David said to his men, every man strap on his sword. That was a quick response. If I wanted to pop on a meme of like the, I don't know, what's the comedian from Anchorman? What's the guy's name?
Ron Burgundy.
If I had to put on a meme of Ron Burgundy, that escalated quickly. So he straps on his sword, and David straps on his sword, and about 400 men went up after David, while 200 remained with the baggage. Nabal's in trouble. So Nabal puts himself and his family in this major bind, and again, this is the kind of person that Abigail lives with. So we've learned about Nabal, and the first thing that you need to know about Nabal, the first point of the lesson, Nabal is a fool. So you can write that down in your notes. Nabal is a fool. But the second thing you can write down, we've learned about Nabal. The second point is that Abigail is wise. So write that right on down in your thing. Abigail is wise. We've learned about the husband. It's time to learn about our main character. It's time to learn about the person who was faithful. Moving on in verse 14, but one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, I said wife the right time that time, behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them. Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm, and we did not miss anything when we were in the fields as long as we went with him. So again, reminder, David was kind to these people. And real quick, who did that servant go to? Was it the head of the household, the man in charge of the business?
No.
Who did the servant go to?
The wife.
The wife. The servant went to Abigail. And before I continue, I want to point something that's extremely important out. I'm going to read a section from Proverbs 31, verses 16 and 18. It says, she considers a field and buys it with the strength with the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. So this is a description of a faithful wife. And you'll notice that a faithful wife is industrious. And for the guys in here, something that you should understand, that should be an attractive quality to you. A lot of times when you're growing up, and I feel like more and more common in our time, there's a lot of guys that see women that are potentially more capable than they are and are smarter than they are better at doing things and are better workers than they are, and they are offended by that. And they're not interested in those kinds of women. That's not an appropriate thing. And a lot of times there's this idea that if a woman is capable, it means that she can't submit and be a wife. And that's wrong. But also, in addition to that, for the ladies, submission is not a result of capability. It's a result of character. I know a lot of girls who feel like I could never be a mother, I could never be a wife because I need to have a career. I don't want to waste my God-given talents, and that's wrong too. And I've met people who were far more strong-willed and far more capable than their husbands, but they actively engaged in proper roles and they submitted to their husbands anyway. And those are some of the richest marriages I've ever seen, where neither person quite fit the role, but both people played it as best they could. And it turned out so well. The specific couple that I'm thinking about is even now, years after my family is not in regular contact with them, they are still now encouraging and giving advice to my parents. And my parents view them as role models. And the wife could have steamrolled the husband very easily. And she didn't. So something that's important, being an industrious woman is something that should be an attractive quality. And being a capable woman does not mean that you don't fulfill your role. So Abigail, she was obviously an extremely capable woman. Nabal's a rich guy despite being an idiot. I'm going to take a wild guess and say that it has nothing to do with Nabal running the business. Abigail's doing it. So that's my little derail. But moving on, in verse 17. Now therefore know this and consider what you should do, because harm is determined against our master and against all his house, and he is such a worthless man that no one can speak to him. Imagine having to be married to that man. He is so worthless that the servants are scared to even talk to him while someone is on their way to kill him. How does that work when you're the wife and you have to talk to that guy? That's rough. So then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine and 5 sheep already prepared and 5 seahs of parched grain and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on donkeys. That's pretty impressive, by the way. After having to just prepare a summer camp, that kind of hits a little bit different. Like, dude, it took me weeks/months to prepare the logistics of this trip, and homegirl gets hundreds and hundreds of stuff for meals for hundreds of men organized in, like, minutes.
She has servants.
She does have servants, but still, like, organizing logistics and running those servants is not easy. I have servants. But I'm a bit jelly. Like, I kind of wish I was that cool. But anyways, and she said to her young men, "Go on before me. Behold, I come after you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. And she rode on the donkey and came down under cover of the mountain. Behold, David and his men came down toward her, and she met them. Now David had said, "Surely in vain I guarded all that this fellow in the wilderness had, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has returned to me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David and more also, if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him." So David's on his way. He's angry. He's going to kill a lot of people. We're talking like Equalizer style killing stuff, you know. So what does Abigail do? In verse 23, when Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down before the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed on the ground. Humility. That's pretty impressive. She comes, she bows down. Very good decision, by the way. She's appealing to David's mercy. And she says, "On me alone, my Lord, be the guilt, because your servant speaks in your ears. Please let your servant speak in your ears, and let the words of your servant, and hear the words of your servant. Let not my Lord regard this worthless fellow, Nabal, for as his name is, so is he." Nabal literally means fool, by the way. That's why she says that. Fitting name. It might have been a nickname. So, "and folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand, now let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my Lord be as Nabal." She just appealed to David's sense of honor. Like, have you ever met people that when they're trying to get you to do something, they walk up to you and they insult you? And they're like, "Dude, home slice, you're such an idiot that this probably doesn't make sense, but how about you stop being a complete doofus for 5 seconds and take my really good advice, you bro?" Does that typically yield, like, good results? Like, does that typically work? Do you know too many people that they take that kind of advice? So Abigail is going to someone who's going to kill her husband, and she gets down on the ground and she says, "Please, just live out that honor that I know you have. I know that you're a man of character. Don't save yourself. Let God save you. And now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young men who follow my Lord." She gives him the food. "Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord as a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord, and evil shall not be found in you so long as you live." And then she talks about how David's already anointed. So she already knows that David's anointed. She's talking about the fact that God's going to take care of him. She's like laying it on thick. she's really appealing to David's awesomeness, and that's like 100% of what this is, which is, by the way, again, what a testament to Abigail's wisdom. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 2 says, "The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly." One of the characteristics of wise people is that they make it easy to listen to their advice. So again, Abigail, extremely wise. Again, contrast that with her husband, the braggart, arrogant jerkwad who almost got himself and all the men in his family killed. And at this point, we've set the scene. You couldn't imagine being married to that kind of person. You have Abigail, who Nabal does not deserve by any stretch of the imagination. Like, Abigail is 10 times the person that Nabal is. How in the world does she interact with this person? Because at this point, we actually haven't seen them interact with each other at all, but we're about to. So what would you guess that Abigail does after saving all of the people in Nabal's household? What do you think she does when she goes home and talks to Nabal about it? Do you think she might, you know, yell at him? Talk to him about the idiocy that he's just engaged in? Yeah?
Just say it bluntly.
Just say it bluntly, yeah. Show up, sit him down, and go, "Hey, man, what do you think?"
That she, like, says it softly to him so he doesn't get mad at her.
Okay, she says it softly and to not get mad at her. How about this? He's in a feast right now. What if she were to reprimand him in front of all of his guests and let all the people at that feast know that they were about to die because of him? Might she get some satisfaction out of that?
No, yeah, she's not going to do that.
Yeah, that'd be pretty satisfying. I feel like, generally speaking, that's how the conflict would go. But instead, we're going to see what she does instead. In verse 36, "And Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he was holding a feast in his house like the feast of a king." By the way, did he have food to share with them?
Yeah.
Having a feast like a king? He had extra. "Like the feast of a king, and Nabal's heart was merry with him, for he was very drunk." How fitting. What was Nabal doing while someone was riding over to kill him and the men in his family? He was getting slapjack wasted. What a great guy to be married to. So what does Abigail do? Does she rip into him while he's wasted? Does she rip into him in front of all the guests? No. "So she told him nothing at all until the morning light. In the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things." What a respectful thing to do. Abigail doesn't rip into him while his wits aren't about him. Abigail doesn't rip into him in public. And it doesn't say that she got into a fight with him. It doesn't say that she yelled with him. It doesn't say that she was harsh. It says that she informed him. In the morning, he spoke to him and she just told him what happened. Which, that's hard. But I just want to point out, I'm going to read you a verse from 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1. And this is instruction from Peter talking to wives that have unfaithful husbands, people that aren't Christians, people that are like Nabal. And this is what he says a wife should be doing about that. It says, "Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won over without a word by the conduct of their wives." And we've talked in the past about gender roles, but just like Abigail's supposed to be submissive, she's supposed to be respectful, she's supposed to be loving and caring, and even in the most difficult situation possible, she follows to the letter the New Testament instructions about how a Christian wife is supposed to function. Like Peter, while he's writing this verse, might have had Abigail in mind. Because this is what she did. And in an extremely difficult situation, like literally after a life or death spot. But let's see God's kindness to Abigail. Because after she tells him, it says, "His heart died within him, and he became a stone, as a stone. And about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died." Can we just appreciate that for a moment? Yes.
He died of shock?
We don't know. He might have died of a heart attack. He might have gone into a coma. He might have just died. Maybe he drank something he didn't know he drank. Maybe God was just like, "Yeah, now you're done."
He died of God.
He died of God. That's really the point. God killed him. It says God. It said that God killed him. and Nabal dies. And so God takes care of Abigail. And then when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord who has avenged the insult I received." And going down further, it says, "Then David spoke to Abigail to take her as his wife. And when the servants of David came to Abigail at Carmel, they said to her, 'David has sent us to you to take you to him as his wife.' And she rose and bowed her face to the ground and said, 'Behold, your handmaid is a servant to wash the feet of my servant, the Lord, of the servant of my Lord.' And Abigail hurried and rose and mounted a donkey, and her five young women attended her, and she followed the messengers of David and became his wife." So God is kind to Abigail. And the thing to think about is that when you're obedient in difficult situations, like I happened to choose a marriage situation, but you're going to find yourself in situations where it is hard to be obedient. Generally, it's going to be situations where it's hard to submit to your parents, and that's just how it is, regardless of how amazing your parents are, because we're young and immature. So you got to think about being committed to doing the right thing, even in the hard spot. And when you do that, God takes care of you. God could have changed Nabal. God could have intervened and helped him to not be such a fool. God could have been kind to Abigail by making Nabal turn the corner, but instead he's extra kind and just kills him. He's extra kind to Abigail and just kills Nabal and lets her marry David instead. So there are things that I want you guys to think about with this. Again, the point of this message and all three messages you're going to hear today or over this week is that obedience is possible. It's possible to be a faithful wife. It's possible to be a faithful wife to an unfaithful, horrible husband. And when you do that, God takes care of you. But something special specifically for ladies is that even in hard situations, you still have a responsibility to be the wife that God calls you to be. And that should make you careful about the kind of people you marry. Because, I mean, marriage is to life, for life. But also for guys, God takes bad husbands seriously. Very seriously. God gives you discipline, and God has just very clearly displayed a story where he killed someone for being a bad husband. Like, God doesn't take that as a joke. It's actually a big deal that you are the kind of husband that you're supposed to be, and Nabal should scare you. But the main point, be obedient, be faithful, do the things that God wants you to do. It actually is possible. So with that, I'm going to just bow our eyes and close our faces and pray it out. Lord, thank you for giving us examples. Thank you that you don't hold us to high standards that are impossible to meet. And even though there is a sense in which we can't be perfect, every single person has some area where they aren't completely faithful. But Lord, faithfulness is possible. Abigail's an example of someone who was faithful in the most difficult of circumstances, and each of us has the same opportunity and ability to be strengthened by your Holy Spirit and to pursue a relationship with you. I pray that you would help us to recognize that, to be encouraged by that, and to pursue it. I pray that you would help us to grow and be faithful. And Lord, I pray these things in the name of our King Jesus Christ. Amen.